indicated to me that there is this body that could assist if we would like to have an opinion or advice or support to ensure that whatever we produce, whatever product we produce, it should be a qualitative product. And also, we have also invited NHBRC, I don't know if they are there, to be part of this presentation. Hence, the NHBRC is one of our support institutions, and that has been regulated as a regulatory authority to also look at the quality assurance of our development. So we found it very, very necessary to invite them to be part of our presentation. And also we found it very, very important that the department, in fact, as the portfolio committee in this fourth parliament, we would appreciate that whenever we have presentations that we think that they may be fruitful or provide assistance, the department must be part of that delegation so that they can listen. And it's not necessary for them to take up whatever it is presented here in this meeting, but they must get that opportunity to listen, and they can even go and work out, and they can come back to us and say whatever we were listening on that presentation, we think we can utilize this, we think we cannot take this. So they can do their own research. So we're not taking their work as the portfolio committee. But because we wanted to create to establish that relationship. Because this relationship is something that is very difficult to establish. And it's not one, I don't delay it. There are so many ways you can approach to establish your relationship, your working relationship with your partner. So we think it is very much important for the department to be with us today. And we also appreciate the office of the Deputy Minister amongst us. And we also invited warm water for all. They are going to give us a presentation, because when we are delivering the human settlement, we said we have to provide everything as the human settlement. So warm water is very much important. And we are very much aware that we are still having challenges pertaining to the electricity distribution amongst our people, more especially in the rural area. So this portfolio committee, I think even in our strategic planning workshop, we did raise these issues that if there are any innovations that would help us when we are delivering this human settlement, anything that is coming forward, we can look at it, scrutinize, and the department can take it up and do their homework, and we come up with an agreement, how we're going to take that forward. So we're going to have those two presentations today. As I've already welcomed you, in my agenda, I've got the opening and welcome, I've done that. Then I would like to invite the apologies, if there are any, from the secretary.
Good morning, members and guests. We have three apologies. One from Mr. Dikhashwi, Ms. Khatibonu, Mr. Ndakane, and also Mr. Bosa.
Thank you very much. I also have an apology from Mr. Mashile. He phoned me last night saying that his sister is, I mean, his sister is not well, so he's going to take him to the hospital this morning. So he's one of the presenters, but I hope, because he promised that he's going to send to ask one of his colleagues from Cape Town to come and make a presentation. So we'll see when we are taking up the presentation. I think it's over to Agriment, South Africa now.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Honourable Chair, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, senior members of the Department of Human Settlements, senior members of the National Home Builders Registration Council, ladies and gentlemen. I think we have a problem with the software. I'll try and speak a bit louder. I hope you can hear my voice. I feel very honoured to be here today. Presenting to the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. It's a great honor and I appreciate the work that Honorable Jeff Dodge did to contact the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement and give us this opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. I'm here on behalf of Agrima South Africa. My name is Joe Odhiambo. I'm the CEO. Apologies from my chairperson, Mr. Pepe Silinga. The invitation was received on Friday, and due to the very short notice, our chairperson had other engagements and therefore could not be with us here today. But he sends his regards and he's given his blessings to the Portfolio Committee. My presentation today will just be on what are the benefits and advantages of using alternative technologies are, which is our mandate. And given that one of our outputs is alternative construction technologies, I will highlight some of them and highlight what the benefits are and how they can support construction. Our mandate only covers alternative technologies. And I will go in more detail during my presentation to highlight the difference between that and what standardized construction technology is. Therefore, without much further ado, I will move on to the presentation. We do report to the Department of Public Works, and our mandate is in the form of a delegation of authority from the Minister of Public Works. Last Monday, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. We've been in existence since 1969, providing assurance by carrying out testing and evaluation, and thereby confirming the fitness of purpose of non-standard construction products and systems. This independent assessment ensures that the product that is tested actually meets the criteria for fitness of purpose and is a quality product and therefore can be used with authority and confidence. Some of the benefits are that some of these technologies actually contribute towards improving the speed of service delivery. Honorable members, one of the key questions we get asked is what is the typical difference between CSR, Agrima, where we are, and the South African Bureau of Standards. And this particular slide here, although it's a bit busy, it's quite simple to understand. When one is developing an idea, you normally start by carrying out research to develop the product. And we come into the phase once the product has been developed, we come and test it to see whether it can actually do what the inventor wanted it to do. So we come in the testing phase of the introduction to market to do the market acceptance test and growth. And once it has been tested and it's used as a standardized product, then the industry gets together and develops standards, and therefore it becomes a standardized product which can be used under the auspices of the South African Bureau of Standards. So this particular slide just illustrates the growth phase from product development through to introduction to market acceptance, and then once it's accepted as a conventional product, then it's used as an ongoing product. However, one of the key differences or one of the key aspects within the regulatory environment is the role that we do play, the NSBRC as well as AGMA play. Now, our role, as I mentioned previously, is to deal with innovative construction systems, including housing delivery. The Bureau of Standards, as you're aware, is a much bigger organization because it covers virtually all aspects within the industry, from cars to motor vehicles to consumer goods to foods and everything. So it's much, much broader. But the National Home Builders Registration Council is a consumer body that provides quality assurance in terms of registration of home builders. In terms of the role of the Bureau of Standards and what is their mandate, the SAB is established as a statutory body in terms of the Standards Act of 1945, Act 24 of 1945. And their mandate is stipulated there as the National Institute that promotes and maintains.
Would appear that we've got the wrong presentation. I noticed the one that we've got the presentation from Salva Priestess, and it certainly differs somewhat from the one that we've given them. Those slides are not after this product development cycle, those slides are not yet. So this one please do that Salva.
Okay, I think the wrong presentation must have been sent through. I apologize for that. But the gist of the presentation is quite similar. Sorry about that. We'll organize copies while I proceed, if I can proceed, and then we'll make the copies during the presentation. The objective of the Bureau of Standards is to publish national standards through technical committees, and the technical committees that develop the standards include interested parties within the construction industry. We do participate in those committees as AGRIMA, so does the NSBRC and several other institutions, like the CSIR, et cetera, et cetera. The Bureau of Standards also does tests and certification of products and services and develops technical regulations based on national standards. The Bureau of Standards also promotes design excellence and provides training on aspects related to standardization. Now, us as AGMA South Africa, we are a statutory body that supports and promotes innovation and technology development in the construction industry. One of our objectives is to provide reassurance of the fitness of purpose of construction products, systems, and materials which are not covered by the Bureau of Standards or Codes of Practice. Now, that's a very important point, honorable members. The Bureau of Standards participates in this aspect which have standards. If somebody has a product which does not have standards, and that is the role where we play. So that's a very important distinction that one must always take cognizance of. The Bureau of Standards deals with standardized products, we deal with non-standardized products. That's the main difference between the two institutions. Now, when you come to what are innovative housing systems, one of them is new materials used in buildings. It could be new methods of applying traditional materials. It could be like, for example, the dry stack walling system, whereby you have a wall constructed with dry stack materials without the necessary use of mortar to join the bricks or the blocks. There are a number of systems using that particular dry stack system. There's conventional products, but applied in an innovative or non-standard method, in a non-traditional manner. The third bullet point there is improvements in design to enhance functionality. You can have something that enhances performance by improving the design. For example, it can improve the thermal comfort. That's an innovative aspect. It could improve the acoustic performance. It could improve the condensation performance. So that could be an innovative aspect which could fall under that particular area. System design, an example there is energy efficient. It could have superior thermal performance. In other words, when it's very hot outside, it will be cooler inside the house, and vice versa. When it's very cold outside, inside the house will be slightly warmer. And we have examples of such structures, where outside it could be 45 degrees or thereabouts, and inside the house it's a cool 20-odd degrees, which is very comfortable. And vice versa, when it's very cold outside the house, down to -10 degrees, inside the house will be 16, 17, 18 degrees, which is quite comfortable. So these are some of the advantages. And then performance-based design. In other words, the design is fit for purpose. It does, it produces results, and therefore it enhances performance of the person who's using it. Now, in terms of mandatory levels of construction, these are the ones which are in the Act, the National Building Regulations and the Building Standards Act, Act 103 of 1977. This is the NBR and the Building Standards Act. These cover the area related to health and safety, accessibility of buildings, in other words, accessibility by people who may have disabilities, etc., and protection. In other words, they deal with the safety aspects. These are items which are enshrined in the international human rights and in terms of protection of individuals' health and safety. Therefore, each building constructed must comply with these particular building national building regulations and acts. These are mandatory acts, and all buildings must comply with that. Now, there are other functional or mandatory regulations which lead from that particular overarching act, which is the National Building Regulations. And the question is, how does a building achieve these objectives? And there are three broad groups in which compliance with these mandatory rules can be achieved. One is when they're deemed to satisfy rules, which are included in the South African National Standards Codes, for example, the new 10400, which is currently being produced, and it could comply with the National Home Builders Registration Council Home Building Manual. Alternatively, it could be rationally designed by a competent person, which could be a registered engineer. Now, this particular aspect of a rational design may cover one aspect of assessment, which may be structural only, for example. And the third particular manner, which is included in the national standards, is the performance-based methods of assessment, which is a comprehensive assessment from a competent assessment agency like AGMA South Africa. So these are the ways in which one can comply with the mandatory rules of regulation to comply with the Building Standards Act. In terms of the NHBRC's contribution to human settlement, the NHBRC has been involved in contributing to the national policy on sustainable human settlement. It has also designed and production of the project documentation of new on the BMG, the typology for the subsidy sectors, and is also involved in promoting innovative technologies. Like we have the innovation hub in Shoshanguve in Pretoria, and there's one that is currently being constructed in Paarl at the moment. So that particular aspect, the NHBRC has been involved in those particular initiatives. Now, if I can take you back to the pre-1994 period when we had the matchbox houses, which were 12 to 14, 16 square meters, as you can see, a typical house built then. Since then, there's been some movement, and between 1994 and 2004, we had the subsidy homes, of which over 1.7 million houses have been built since 1975, and there's been an improvement. But as the chairperson mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, there's a current challenge regarding the quality. I must just mention that at the current rate of delivery, approximately 185,000 houses per year, it will take more than 30 years to eradicate the current backlog, hence the need for faster, quicker, more efficient means of production if you're to bridge that particular gap. Now, government and NHBRC's approach to quality housing. The former Minister of Housing tasked the NHBRC to look at ways of improving the quality of houses delivered in South Africa with the objective of, one, providing beneficiaries with a wider choice of good quality affordable housing, promoting collaboration and partnership with relevant key players in the broader construction industry. Third point is stimulating economic growth in the home building industry and social development and upliftment. And lastly, facilitating the delivery of the housing backlog. Now, this was what the NHBRC did. And currently, the NHBRC supports in terms of the DNG. It looks at issues of affordability, constructability, energy efficiency, et cetera, including maintenance. I just passed this particular slide is an example of a house which is at the Innovation Hub I mentioned in Pretoria, the Eric Molobi Innovation Hub, which looks at it's a site in Shoshanguve, north of Pretoria, where individuals who have alternative technologies were given a piece of land and they put up houses which were built up there, and they were left after they were put up so that individuals can go and see the various different kinds of technologies and how they would perform in use. And it's quite, as I mentioned, the second one is currently being built in close to Paarl. Now, in terms of Agrimar, since we currently have about 482 certificates. Now, a certificate is an assessment of a product which gives what tests have been done on that particular product. It explains what the product is, gives where that product can be used. It also gives a technical description of what the product is, how it can be used, what aspects of it were tested, how it was tested, and how it performed. And if it is okay, then we give it a certificate of acceptance which allows the person to use it, as I explained earlier. Of these 482 certificates, we have 170 certificates, which is quite a big number, which are currently valid. And honorable members, a lot of our Agrimar certificates are currently used as standardized products. I'll just mention a couple which have gone through and are currently used as standard products. One is a hollow concrete block, which you see as used in all over the country. This came through the Agrimar route and is now used as a standardized product. The metal roofing tiles, you're all familiar with Harvey tile. This is the same metal sheet that form looks like a tile. It came through the Agrimar route and is currently used as a standardized product. There are several other derivatives, but the principal first one came through the Agrimar certificate. The lightweight internal partitions, the ones you see in all the big hotels or the big office buildings, these partitions between the offices, when they were introduced in South Africa, they came through the Agrimar assessment. And once they're assessed, and they are now used as standardized products and used by several different suppliers. Copper piping, if you can remember, a long, long time ago, people used to use copper was not used for piping, but now it is used as a standardized product. Various kinds of waterproofing and wall coating materials. We have a few samples on the table outside, so I'd invite you to take some time after the meeting to just look at the product. The plastic bathtubs, remember all the long, long time ago we used to use cast iron bathtubs. So these are just a few examples of some of the products which have gone on and are now used as standardized products. Of late you're seeing much more advanced materials coming through, and we hope that they too will be embraced and used extensively within the country. Now, what is it that Agrimar does in terms of our testing and assessment? What is the typical scope of evaluation? What do we look at when you say something has been tested? One of the aspects, obviously, you must, honorable members, you must appreciate that structural strength and stability is absolutely crucial. We often hear of failed structures where a whole building collapses, and it normally leads to loss of life and terrible destruction. Now, we pay great attention to structural strength and stability, and touch wood, none of our products have ever failed in their use in practice. Fire, very crucial. We often see the devastating effect of fire on our communities, which is very sad. Our products are thoroughly tested for fire. The fire rating for our product for an internal partition wall is 1 hour, 60 minutes. In other words, that structure, when put to a fire, should be able to withstand structural integrity for 1 hour without collapses or failure. For external buildings, for external walls, it's 30 minutes. In other words, if there's a fire within that building, somebody will have 30 minutes to get out, which is quite a stringent, one of the most stringent fire ratings for our structures. So these two aspects are two key aspects, because they deal with health and safety of the occupants. The other aspects are equally important. Resistance to water penetration, that's the ability of the structure to prevent water penetrating from one side of the element to the other side. Crucial for buildings, you don't want people falling sick due to condensation, etc., due to a rising damp or water penetration. Thermal and energy performance, I've spoken about that, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, about the importance and the benefits of superior thermal performance of structures which have enhanced thermal performance. Acoustic performance, you don't want your neighbors to hear what you're saying in between structures or between rooms of occupied by different persons. Accurate in building. The honorable chairperson mentioned the question of quality. If a building is not accurately constructed, if the person cannot construct accurately, then you end up with poor quality. Durability is a key aspect of assessment, and quality. We visit all our suppliers at least once every year, and after every 3 years, we do a comprehensive reevaluation. We go back and ensure that what he said he was building is what he is still building 3 years later. So it's a comprehensive, it's a proven system, and it works. We can say with confidence that if one has an Agroma certificate, he has a product that will work in practice. And obviously, this particular assessment of evaluation scope ensures compliance with the National Building Regulation. Honorable members, these are just typical examples of some of the tests. You can see that a pressure test or a deterioration test to simulate the effect of driving rain. We pressurize the water, and we put it onto a wall to see the effect of continuous driving rain onto a structure, what impact will it have. On the right-hand side there's a soft body impact test. This sandbag is lifted up to about 1.2 meters and left to fall onto the wall. It's about 30 kilograms in weight and simulates the impact of an object hitting the wall. You know, somebody riding a bicycle falling over on the wall or something like that. Or a moving object striking the wall. Will the wall stand? Will it collapse? Honorable members, these are just some of the examples of some of the tests that we do carry out. We do compress structures to see how they would perform under stress. We do compression tests. We do tension tests to pull them apart. We also do racking tests. We subject them to all kinds of stress to see how this particular product will perform when used. A standardized product. This particular test is quite spectacular, the large-scale fire test. The CSIR, where we do sit in Pretoria, has the largest testing rig for fire testing within the country. And we do subject our structures for large-scale fire testing, where we put the panel onto a big structure and see how long it will take for the structure to burn. The fire is projected from the one side, and on the alternative side you have electronic probes which record the impact, the temperature, and the time at which the fire takes to penetrate that particular structure. So this is an important test. It determines how the resistance to fire is on the particular structure. A full burnout test. Very spectacular test as well. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, this particular test was actually screened on SABC a year or two ago. It was a test carried out on our test site at the CSR in Pretoria. they built this particular structure and put a paraffin lamp and then knocked it over, and with cameras they captured how long the impact of the fire. And within about 2 minutes, the temperature within that particular structure had risen to over 1,000 degrees centigrade. In other words, if you're sleeping, you had absolutely no chance of getting out of that building alive. 2 minutes is the amount of time it took to get to 1,000 degrees. And that's a normal building with a normal fire load. Just a normal blanket, normal mattress, and the paraffin. The fire temperature just shoot up. So ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, fire is a crucial asset. We test the product for fire performance. We do not allow substandard materials to get to the market. Now, water penetration tests, I've mentioned this before, and this is just an illustration of the testing equipment. Now, in terms of government's priorities, as mentioned by the Honorable President on the 3rd of June this year in his State of the Nation address, Jacob Zuma highlighted 10 particular areas in which government is going to focus on. The first one was to speed up economic growth and transform the economy and create decent work and sustainable livelihoods. Thanks. Now, us as Agrimar, we translate this and think that our products must be fit for purpose, which is what we do. And we do facilitate the acceptance of these particular products by minimizing the risk of safely introducing this product to the market. Our products, we do have deemed to satisfy status within the National Building Regulations. And us as Agrima, we are written into several laws which take place, including the Standards Act, the NHBRC, who are here with us today, the Municipalities Act, the Banking Act, etc., etc. So it's crucial that this particular aspect we do align ourselves with government priorities. In terms of government, second priority was a massive program to build economic and social infrastructure. Now, that is clearly, squarely within the Department of Human Settlements mandate. And we as Agrima support this by ensuring that our evaluations are a means of enabling the safe introduction of innovative solutions. How? By reducing the risks associated with these substances, by acting as a gatekeeper to test products and only allowing those which are fit for purpose to be used. We support this particular mandate. And remember that our certification covers all aspects of construction, that is building and civil infrastructure. Outside we have some road products, bridge deck joints, alternative road surfacing material. So we have products which cover the entire spectrum. And we do this by reducing the risks associated with untested or innovative systems by allowing only those products which are fit for purpose to be introduced. Third point that President Jacob Zuma mentioned was develop and implement a comprehensive rural development strategy. We develop, we assess products which are suitable for use in far outlying areas, for example, water tanks, farm sheds, etc., chicken houses, etc. But the second point there, road stabilizing products. We have rural roads which are used by low volume, in other words, few vehicles per day. And these products actually have the advantage in that they can be low cost, thereby enabling them to cover more distance or be used at farther places. Some of the products are also quite light, which allows them to be used in far outlying areas. Dust palaces, which are products which you can put on dust roads to reduce the nuisance of dust. So we have solutions which can assist government in implementing a comprehensive rural development strategy. Now for housing, as I mentioned, the lightweight structures which can be easily either airlifted or transported to far outlying areas. This particular aspect, strengthening human resource base, we work with municipalities to have them make informed decisions, because we test the product so the municipality can use the product with confidence. I mentioned previously that our certificate holders are audited annually to ensure that they have in place adequately trained personnel to effectively and consistently manufacture or erect the building system. In terms of the fifth priority of government was to improve the health profile of South Africa, our products we look at health and safety, and I mentioned the areas that we assessed, areas of structure performance, fire performance, thermal performance, water penetration, and condensation. In terms of the fight against crime and corruption, a lot of our products can be used to improve security. For example, security doors, we have windows, and we have fencing materials. All these aspects can be used in the fight against crime. The seventh point mentioned by the Honorable President was building a cohesive, caring, and sustainable community. We believe that proper housing and improved infrastructure will go away long way to providing a caring and sustainable community. Obviously, I believe there's a place for non-standardized and innovative solutions in helping to address these particular needs. We believe that the evaluation of fitness for purpose of these alternative systems is our core business, and we are currently the only organization in Africa who provides this service. And we work well with our sister organizations throughout the world. So our products help to build cohesive, caring, and sustainable communities. In terms of working with Africa and the rest of the world to pursue African advancement and enhance international cooperation, we are a member of the World Federation of Technical Assessment Organizations, the WASTAO. And we are already well placed to benefit from and already does on international cooperation. A lot of our products are used all over the continent, and we have several meetings with this particular organizations from other parts of the African continent and the rest of the world. The ninth point was to ensure sustainable resource management and use, and we are currently investigating ways of assessing sustainability and green issues as part of the evaluation process. The new legislation on green buildings is currently almost being completed, and once completed, AGMA will be best placed to carry out these particular assessments of green particular buildings. The tenth point in the government's priority in terms of going ahead was to build a developmental state and improve public services and strengthen democratic institutions. AGMA South Africa participates in this priority and could be enabled to achieve far more. Currently, there is legislation to ensure that non-standardized and innovative products and systems be certificated prior to use in South Africa. Now, this legislation is currently in the process being handled by the Department of Public Works, and this legislation will ensure that inferior products are not passed off usually to the poor people in South Africa. All products must be tested for them to be used. We hope that this legislation will be passed in the near future. Other benefits of AGMA certification in support of government's mandate is that this particular assessment, this individual AGMA certificate, provides support to entrepreneurial ambition by giving individual products the technical confidence that it can be used. It also leads to improvement of existing products and can capitalize on the existence of unique testing equipment which you do have available at the CSIR. Within us, as AGMA, we also develop unique testing criteria, and we do have unique testing equipment and methods of testing products. Other benefits of AGMA certification, we do help government to fulfill its promise of developing suitable and affordable housing acceptable within South Africa. We do promote the export of South African products to other parts of the world. A lot of people who have AGMA certificates export their products to other parts of the world on the strength of the AGMA certificate. Our certification also emphasizes socioeconomic aspects and provides reassurance of fitness for purpose and is an authoritative assessment of system performance. Now, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I do have one or two examples. I must stress that what I've chosen here is not to promote any particular system over and above the others. All AGMA certificates are fit for purpose and may be used. I've just chosen a couple so that I can highlight samples of various different kinds of construction. It is not to promote any particular product or any particular kind of construction. All products are fit for purpose and may be used as such. Outside also we have a few samples, which is not the full spectrum, but just an illustration of some of the systems that we do have. Now, the Sun Building System is one particular system which is quite successful and has been used extensively here in the Cape as well as in Gauteng. It's made out of a polystyrene-based system with a fiber-core plaster, which is a high-strength plaster, which makes it as hard as concrete. But the polystyrene core in the middle is the framework. And then the plaster on the outside gives it so much strength that it's stronger than conventional buildings in terms of structural strength, but it's polystyrene core. As I mentioned, it's been used here in Gauteng, and I mean here in the Cape as well as in Gauteng. It can be used for double-story structure with a light gauge floor, suspended floor system. The details are there in the drawing. You can look at them in your own time. And we do have a couple of samples outside. This particular system, when I visited one of the sites where it was being used in Gauteng, in one of the townships, the people who were there actually stated that this is the type of house they want. They don't want the houses that crack and break. They prefer this strong house. It's quite a strong house. It's a robust house. Quite a tough house. Apparently, this particular house is 10 to 15% cheaper than comparable regular construction. It has a faster construction period. It comes with higher specification. The finish is good quality, very good quality. You look at it, it's very good. As I mentioned, this particular house, due to its polystyrene core, it has superior thermal performance. It's 6 degrees warmer in winter and 2 degrees cooler in summer. These are recorded temperatures due to independent testing. And they're 67% more energy efficient. In other words, you use less energy for heating and cooling. They have much superior strength, as I mentioned. And as I mentioned, the fiber core cluster gives a compressive strength of more than 20 MPa, which is much harder than most concrete. It's very, very tough. It's a green building technology. It uses 95% local unskilled labor, thereby providing jobs for our people. And does not require any specialized equipment. It's a very simple structure. It's universally socially acceptable in South Africa. So these are some of the solutions. Another example, the robust building system. We actually do have a sample of this particular core, the metal framework in the middle that you have on the right-hand side. This metal zigzag shape forms the core. It's an expanded metal sheeting. In other words, the metal structure. Then between the metal, it's you put two panels of mortar, which is applied on both sides, so that it becomes a solid structure. It's a very, very strong structure, and it's quite similar to the previous system. It is also very, very, very strong. It's a very tough structure. It's also been used, currently it's being used on a big housing scheme in Gauteng at the moment. Skipped building system, similar to the previous one, only that the metal is placed horizontal rather than laterally. It has a metal framework in the middle. You can see the zigzag. And then you have a mesh applied on the two sides, and the plaster on the outside. Quite a strong building system as well, a skipped building system. We are all familiar with Rhino Wall. In all the hotels where you do sleep, most of them are partitioned with similar structures, a dry walling system. Very luxurious and high quality finish, I must admit. But an innovative system and can be used as a non-standardized construction technology. This will be quite interesting. Goldflex. It's been around for quite a while. As you can see, it was certificated in 1989, the first one. It now can be used for multi-story building. It was used for a big scheme. If any of you have been to Rwanda, I'm told. I've not been there. But I'm told next to the airport there's a project in next to the Luanda airport, where this particular high-rise structure is using this particular system, has been used. It's also been used in Morocco for earthquake-resistant construction. It's an interesting project. If I can just spend a minute to describe it, it's a precast concrete, mass concrete system. In other words, the walls and the windows are the window frames on the walls and the door frames are cast on the wall panels on the ground, and then it's lifted into position with a crane, and then joins it together to form the hull. Currently, it's been used on a project in Kalfontein Extension 22 in Gauteng, where they put up 858 single-storied houses, and they're currently building 500 double-story structures, I'm told, in close to Soweto. These are just aerial photographs of the particular project in Johannesburg, in Gauteng. The middle diagram there is a production site for manufacturing plant on site. And as you can see, it was put up in an existing township where people actually do live. And that's one of the advantages. It can actually be built in an area where people actually already live. It can be used for various different kinds of construction. Now, some of the advantages are that it's hurricane and earthquake resistant, as I mentioned. It's quite strong and durable, and it's low maintenance in terms of 10, 15 years of re-coating cycle. Its advantages, it uses local suppliers, local laborers. It uses local subcontractors for most of the specialized work, electrical connections, plumbing, roofing, glazing, finishes. Also provides job, social empowerment, and delivers quality housing and infrastructure. In terms of social empowerment, it's a huge investment for infrastructure. Just one of the things they do is when they go into a local area, they take the people from the community and train them on the use of this system, thereby keeping the jobs and the money from the project within that particular community. They do not bring their own laborers. They train the people from the community and use them in the construction site. Therefore, they do have classroom sessions where they go through the product and teach them theoretically. Then they go out to site and do the practical tests before they go on to full manufacturing on site, where they do the manufacturing. You can see them laying the slabs. Then it's lifted with a crane. You can see the crane lifting it there into position, placing it. Then they're placing the other structures, and voila, within a couple of days, you have a full house. They use a production phase kind of system whereby they can produce a number of houses in a day due to the continuous production system that they do employ. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, what I do have now is a list of all Agrima certificated building systems for your perusal at your own time. I won't go through all of them one by one, but it's there for your record. As you can see, there are quite a number of systems. Now, in concluding, I just want to state that we work together with the National Home Builders Registration Council, as well as the Department of Housing. Dr. Tokopo, we work quite closely with her, as well as Dr. Mahachi from the NHBRC. And we believe that when we do carry out this particular test, it's for the benefit of the economy of South Africa. We are capable of doing all the tests, and we believe that, as I mentioned, that we can contribute to South Africa's national presidential imperative and human settlement through human resource development training, quality products, materials, and diverse innovative products. Together, we can deliver more quality homes. I thank you, ladies, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. There is a link to our website. I've gone through this presentation rather quickly, and you may contact me or visit our website for further information. Again, I'd like to convey the apologies from the chairperson of the board of Agrima, Mr. Petit Salinga, who, due to the short notice, could not be here, but should there be further engagements, I'm sure he'd be willing to join the portfolio committee for a presentation. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Otia, with your comprehensive presentation. I think it's time for interaction by the honorable members. Let me come to this side so that I can read it. Thank you very much. The honorable members are welcome and have joined us later. Honorable Foreman, to be followed by Honorable Stain, Honorable Mubanya, and that session. Yeah.
Probably just to start off with a comment. This is very impressive, I must say, to me to be here, especially when we've been just last week to go and see what is sitting out there on the enthusiasm. Because I don't understand how we've got all these products and yet we still seem to have so much problem with quality on the ground. Now, maybe this is also a question to the department to say, if, and you know, one of the questions I noticed here earlier was the costs involved here, but you already answered that when you came here and you spoke about the benefits of it being cheaper. The other thing I would like to know, you talk about the quality and the sustainability of it all, and obviously I like very much the idea where you're working towards the cooling and the heating, you know, the alternate materials. So that we reduce, you know, the energy that we use inside the home. But what is the long-term sustainability? How long have you had these structures on the ground where people have been living in them and using them, whereby, you know, we end up with still a very good product? What is the lifespan of a house like this? And what would be the problems that could arise? I'm thinking of the foundations now that go, you know, under this thing, because often that is where a lot of the problems arise, is because the foundations are not that adequate. And then, you know, what we saw last week was water everywhere. Now, how well does your structure, if one is ending up in a waterlogged situation, how does your structure stand up to that? I think I'll just leave it there for the moment. I want to also try to understand that you come in alongside of, as I think I'm understanding correctly, chairperson, the SABS and the National Building Regulation and so on. I think you fit in together with that, so your structures are all, with your stamp of approval, it's good quality. That is what is coming through here. That is what's on the ground, that's what is there.
Thank you, Honorable Ben.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to follow up with the last question asked by my colleague, and that is the actual relationship between Agrium and South Africa. The SABS and organizations like the NHBRC. Because if my understanding is correct, that a product or a material doesn't necessarily have to go through the agreement certification process to be accepted by, for example, the SABS. I must say, however, that as an engineer, that we have certainly in the past, if the product has the agreement certificate, it has certainly lended a lot more weight to that product in terms of specifying them. Chairperson, then perhaps, and again it touches on the question asked by Member Bowman, and this is to the department. What Agreement South Africa does, and it may enlighten Member Bowman, is that they certify only the materials. But where the problem is how those materials are used and put together. And I think that's what we saw at the N2 Gateway and at so many other projects. And perhaps it's something that the department needs to think about, specifically for subsidized housing, where we may need some type of organization that will certify the supervision, the monitoring process. Because it's one thing to use a very good product, but if it's used incorrectly, then you're going to end up with the sort of problems we see at the Gateway. So perhaps we should look at when a construction company is awarded a tender, we not only look at obviously the price and the past performance, but they should perhaps have some sort of certificate in terms of monitoring and quality control of the final product, not just the material. Then something that sort of raised eyebrows for me was 169 currently valid certificates out of 482. Does that in fact mean that the rest of them are no longer valid? I'm not sure how that plays out. Because if that's the case, then why are less than half in fact still valid? Then just a quick question on that testing for the fire durability. Would that particular test for perhaps the roofing material, for the actual walls of that particular structure, was it for all of it? I would just like to know, was it, you know, because if it's for one particular material, then obviously the other materials may have had an effect. A question regarding the funding. I would imagine that an entrepreneur that comes up with an innovative product would want to submit it for testing because it would be to his or her advantage. Do they have to pay for it? Where does the funding for this organization come from? Then, Chairperson, just lastly, I'm quite interested in the legislation that was mentioned that is going to go to public work. And I think my understanding is that currently contractors may very well use a non-approved product. Non-approved by Agriment South Africa, I would imagine that it's got to be at least SABS approved before they can use it. So in terms of this legislation, how far is this legislation? Is there a draft out for comment? And then, Chair, just very lastly, I mean, we get all this very good stuff. The material is very good, it's cheaper, it's got lots of benefits. And perhaps again it's to the department, why don't we see a lot more of these alternatives, whether it's material or construction methods, being used on subsidized housing? Because wherever we go, it's the standard method of construction, mortar and bricks, that continuously fails or that's not of a good standard. Why are we not pushing more for the use in our tenders, for example, that they must use a very specific alternative material or construction method?
Thank you, Honourable Bungwan.
Thank you for the opportunity to answer. I must first of all extend my apologies for my late show up. The reasons we will discuss later. The previous colleagues and honourable members have covered some of my concerns. But I would like the presenters to bear with me because I'm new to the committee. I would like to find out first if this is a private company. Are they here to tout for acceptance or agreement by government, or is there an existing contract between the government and the South? That's number one. Number two, considering what my colleagues have already, honourable members have already asked, I'm concerned further about the jobs they seem to be touting here, creation of job opportunities. What is going to happen to the existing businesses that people have invested money on trying to set up in the construction industry? Number two, it looks like they are coming if they are accepted, if they have not been it looks like if their method or their product is being approved of, then it is the end of the entrepreneurs that are already, the SMMEs that are already on the building trade, most of whom have already actually improved quite a lot. Number six, also, there is the question of training. The people who are being trained, are they trained on the manufacturing of the product or on the assembling of the product? And also, what I would like to know, when they come to build, are they coming to build with a specific plan, and who approves of the plan for building? Because I'm totally averse by the matchbox scene that we have been coming across with, and how the matchboxes are lying on top of one another, and there has been, you know, all the factors that you have mentioned that your product is good at, like acoustics, like water and fire, those fall apart when the disaster hits that particular community. And also, I want to find out if they are approved of, where are they going to be implementing, or where are they going to be putting up their structures? For the time being, that's about all. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the conference.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member, for the very good question. I will attempt to answer the...
Wanted to ask a question?
Yeah, just a
point. You can
come. Please, just a point of clarity. I think there are two questions I would like to ask, and they relate to the tactical projects.
There's reference to projects where some of the products are being used. Two of them. Could that be an indication of whether or not they are? What is the profile of those projects? Are they high value or mixed, or do they have our low income component in them? That's the first one. The second one, which I think might have that concern. We have been given, I think there's a slide, number 43, the Gulf Container Extension 22, which is about 1,358 average. First phase two, that is 500 average storage building. Obviously, one would want to get a sense of what is the average size of this, to get a sense of also the appropriate costing arrangements, in particular relating to our target group. Because when I work out the average, it sounds in the region of 7,000 per unit average for those products. But what might be tricky is the range of the sizes, etc. So it doesn't give you a very good costing. So could we get a bit of information with regard to that? Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, thank you very much for the questions. I appreciate the questions. They're quite insightful, and thank you very much for them. I'll begin by, in the order that the questions were asked, the questions to the department I will leave out, and I will try and address the questions. The first questions were from Honourable Singh. The first question regarding the Gate 2, N-Way Gate 2 project, and why all these projects and yet you have so many problems on the ground. The second question was relating to cooling and heating. I think the first question is a question that I'll allow the department to respond. Cooling and heating and the reduced energy. Yes, the products, some of them do have superior thermal performance, and they do contribute towards improving reducing the energy usage on the buildings.
in terms of how long they will last. Most of the products that we do assess, we do carry out durability tests, which is accelerated weathering, which simulates the lifespan over a long period of time. And therefore, we assess them for their fitness or purpose over an extended duration of period. Therefore, before the certificate is awarded, it should be a durable product. You cannot sell a product today that tomorrow will fall apart. So they're quite durable. How long have these buildings been on the ground? I think that's related to the same question of durability. We do test them for durability. In terms of overseas, we have structures which have been built with alternative technologies which last, which are 40, 50 years old. Here in South Africa, they're still relatively new. But the technologies, some of them are being used overseas as standardized technologies and have been in use for several years. Therefore, the products are quite durable. In terms of foundations, a lot of our structures are actually lightweight in terms of their weight, and therefore a number of them require conventional foundation. Some use raft foundation, which is more like a floating kind of foundation. Because of the lightweightness of the structure, the raft foundation may be adequate. We look at the foundation performance as part of the assessment. We do not only test the walling, we test the entire system. We test the entire building system, the performance of the walls, the floors, the roof, and the whole unit as a complete unit. In terms of water logging and whether our structures can stand up to that, each particular site is subject to an assessment in terms of its fitness or purpose of the ground to be able to carry the load of the structure that will be erected on it. And thereby, those tests are done by a geotechnical engineer who carries out soil bearing capacity tests, which do determine the suitability of the soil and thereby designing an appropriate foundation for that particular soil. That is an element of design and is normally the responsibility of the design engineer. Each particular site is different from the other, and therefore each design engineer takes responsibility for the foundation on that particular construction site. As I mentioned in my presentation, we work closely with the Bureau of Standards. We sit on a number of their subcommittees, as well as the Home Builders Registration Council. We work closely with them. We are currently working together on the new innovation hub down here in Paarl, and we work together on the previous innovative site in Shoshanguve in Pretoria. I must stress that our mandate is to test the products. NHBRC's mandate is to register builders in terms of the warranty scheme, as I mentioned in my presentation. But we work closely with them. They refer people to us when people go and see them in terms of alternative technologies, and we carry out those assessments. In terms of the department, we work closely with the National Department of Housing. Dr. Fukoko here is our contact person, and we do communicate on issues related to innovative construction technologies, as well as the other senior officials within the department. On the follow-up questions by the honorable member regarding South African Bureau of Standards and NHBRC, yes, if one has an ASRMA certificate, then one does not have to go for an SABS certificate as such, because the ASRMA certificate has deemed to satisfy status within the National Building Regulations. But on the question of whether ASRMA certificates only the materials, I think this was relating to the fire question, if I'm right. Yes, we on that particular test that I showed in that particular slide, the full-scale burnout test. That particular test was for the media purposes, and the purpose of the test was to show how long it takes for the structure to reach flash points, which is the 1,000 degrees when, you know, it's everything is burning, it's actually melting. The building was built for the test purposes. We had like 1,000 media members of the public and the media there, and it was being for the national TV. There was no superimposed fire load. It was just a blanket, the mattress, the paraffin lamp, and one or two samples which you'd find in a typical house, a television, plaster, etc., etc. And so the fire load was a typical house. There's no superimposed fire load. The materials were the normal materials, the wall, the roof, the ceiling, the floor, etc., and the door, and the window. And it was typical simulation. And we had cameras there, very expensive cameras, which burned in the fire, of course. And it was just to see what happened in a typical fire. We did not test one element, we tested everything. There were, I think, there were probes or something, whatever terminology they use for those things that record the temperatures. They were put on various aspects, so you could see the temperature on the floor, on the wall, on the ceiling, on the roof. And you could see the temperatures rising like a spike to 1,000 degrees in under 2 minutes. Within 5 minutes, that structure was destroyed completely, finished. So it was this particular test. You can see where the structures, where the people are sitting, was just for show, for TV, for capturing for the media to view. The next question, I believe, is for the Department of Housing. May need some kind of organization to do the supervision and monitoring of quality of construction. I will leave that to the Department of Housing, Human Settlements, to respond. The next question is a very good question. Currently, there are 169 valid certificates out of 482 certificates that we certificated over our period in time. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned at the beginning that a lot of our products do go on, in fact, on this particular slide, do go on and become used as standardized products. So once it's a standardized product, it does not need an AGRIMA certificate. So in the previous slide where I showed, the second slide, I showed the transition from this particular slide, from the research to the testing phase standardized product. So once it's a standardized product, it does not need an AGRIMA certificate. He can use a drywall partition, he can use a habitat as a standardized product. So the need for that certificate falls away, and therefore it becomes non-valid. But it is still an AGRIMA certificate, but it's invalid. I hope that explains it. The fire question I've responded. In terms of our funding, we are a government agency funded by the National Department of Public Works. We do get an annual grant. Our salaries as employees of the CSR, though we are an independent technical assessment agency, are funded by the Department of Public Works. We do charge a very, very small assessment fee, technical assessment fee, which covers the direct costs of the technical assessment only. We are not a profit-making organization. We are not here to promote any particular individual product or purpose or system, but we do a service. We are a service-oriented organization to assist the National Department of Housing, Human Settlements, in implementing their system by carrying out that independent assessment of innovative construction technologies and building systems. Currently, our funding is from the Department of Public Works. In terms of the legislation, it's still early days. There is no draft out for public comment as yet. We are hopeful that once the draft is out for public comment, obviously it will be, as key stakeholders, the NHBRC, as well as the Portfolio Committee on Housing, as well as the National Department of Housing, will be engaged in stakeholder engagement session forum, and at that stage, thereafter, it will be distributed for public comment. It is being developed by the policy unit within the National Department of Public Works. The next question, I think, was for Department of Housing. Why don't we see more of alternative materials and construction methods? I'll allow the National Department to respond to that. I think I didn't get the name of the next honorable member who asked the questions. I apologize for that. But the questions relate to whether we are a private company. I've answered that. No, we are not a private company. We are a public agency reporting to the National Department of Public Works. We are a government, state-owned public entity. We are not touting for jobs. We are not touting to promote people to lose existing businesses. We are a technical assessment agency which performs technical assessment tests on non-standardized innovative construction materials and building systems. In terms of training, do we train on manufacturing only or assembly only? The example I illustrated, where I illustrated a training classroom and a training on erection, that particular site, which is Goldsex 800, the minor global site, they do carry out testing both for manufacture and assembly. The plans, who approve the plans, this I'll allow the Department of Human Settlements to respond because they're the ones who provide the projects. In terms of the projects, where are the two projects I illustrated? The examples I showed there, one is in Kalfontein, as I mentioned, which is in Ivory Park, north of Johannesburg, south of Pretoria, in Tembisa. The other one was in Soweto, in Johannesburg as well. And there are lots of other sites all over the nation if one looks for them. And the last questions, the project locations, I've just responded to that, where the two are. In terms of the costs, which profile, whether the high value or low value, the examples I illustrated are in the affordable housing category, the more low cost housing. In terms of size of structures, I think housing can respond to that, but I think it's affordable housing, which is, I think, 42 odd. I don't know the exact square meter rate. But due to the fact that I think the government allows a size, an amount, the size depends on what you can build for a certain amount of money. So that particular question is regarding the size. I don't have the exact size or the exact value of the contract, but I can make that available should that be required at a later date. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I think we can just another round of questions
Good morning, Madam Chair. There were a few questions that required or directed at the department. If you permit, we could respond to those. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a bit of, I know there are two specific questions, but it may be useful to share with the committee one or two perspectives. The one being that in South Africa, the estimated number of houses, units, it's about 12.5 million. There's 12.5 million households in the country. Of those, just about 8 million houses there are. Of the 8 million, the department in the last 15 years or so contributed about 2.8 million. In the 2.8 million houses provided, the quality failures, our estimates are about 10%, between 10 and 15%. That's on the one level, just contextual, so that we isolate the size of the problem of quality failure. Second to that, Madam Chair, is the reality that we need to carefully distinguish between one, alternative technologies vis-a-vis quality failures. If we want to deal with quality failures, we'll have to enter that space comprehensively and isolate the root causes, everything. When we deal with alternative technologies, systems, and materials, we will have to deal with that. You can have the best of technologies. You simply have to see how many car accidents happen in the country. The cars are very good, better than anywhere in the world, well, generally. But it's more how the cars, regardless of the quality, the cars are involved in accidents. So the problem is not the cars, it's the user. Well, sometimes there's a problem with the mechanics and so forth. And therefore, Madam Chair, let me enter then the space of alternative technologies. Members would recall, or at least should members would be aware that since 2004, the department, in fact, the comprehensive plan for human settlement elevated the question of alternatives as one of the means to contribute in accelerating delivery, but also countering certain pressures of material supply and so forth. Now, since then, there's been a huge effort. What my colleague is referring to about the collaboration with the, between the NHBRC and various agencies is a response from in that context. Now, two things have happened. We've put the innovation hub out there. We've undertaken a full assessment as to what are the issues at play in alternative technology. The alternative technology meets in many respects with a number of pressures. What is presented here is correct from a purely technical product perspective. And that's a product which is an input into a house. It's not a house, it's a product. Products which in themselves need to be combined to ultimately produce a house, a dwelling. And therefore, one has to look at the questions of pricing. Our findings are that these are generally expensive given the specifications or the minimum norms and standards determined by the minister. But also, there is the reality that you also have to attend to the soil conditions, the foundations, all of the products that have been brought to us require that. There's a foundation issue, and that you cannot escape the reality of concrete and those sort of issues that are established. And therefore, the product that is provided or the product that has been brought to us, they are not dealing with the totality. It's simply the wall or the roof or the partitions, but the base, the foundation, remains a question mark. And therefore, we're not talking the full product or the house. We're talking input towards the house. And therefore, we need to distinguish that. But at the same time, there's been different issues. The advocates of the alternative technologies don't have the capacity to go to scale. And that in itself requires government to take the risk in going to scale. So we must buy the product at scale, and therefore that will enable the supplier to then go to scale. Now, that's a risk that it has not been acceptable, because in the main, these products are brought to us to put in the subsidy sector. They in themselves are not generally found elsewhere in the value chain. It's only the rich people and so forth, somebody wanting to do certain things. And therefore, there is limitation in terms of the application of the same technologies in the open market. I'm not sure if my colleagues in the Agrima board have those numbers as to the application of all of these technologies that are certified and so forth. So that presents other dimensions that we have to take into account. And therefore, from the department's point of view, we've had to look at the full chain. And that full chain, Madam Chair, reveals that the beneficiaries, the people whom we want to leave in these structures, they are mixed reactions. But the standard reaction is that if it's not a brick, it's not a house, or it is regarded to be inferior, or in some cases, it's a function of ignorance, which you can deal with by way of consumer education, empowerment, and so forth. But the reality is that these products bring in, or rather ignore, a fundamental consideration. That which is saying, where I am, here in Davis Kloof in Mujachi, what are the indigenous materials, solutions, that can be applied to achieve the same outcome. Until we attend to that gap, we are going to find that we are trying to introduce a product that people can relate to, because a number, polystyrene, and in themselves they are credible, but their application in Zanin, I'm from there, in case members wondering. And therefore, what is the indigenous technology that would be applicable there or anywhere else in the country? And we seem to be missing that reality, and therefore communities out there come back to these issues and they raise them with us at a point of project design, packaging, and so forth. So we've undertaken a full review to say, yes, we're supporting, we want to support, but there are a number of limitations on the uptake, the communities at the project level. But at the same time, what we are talking about, Madam Chair, here is a shifting of the whole industry. And you can't shift the industry with products. You have to shift the industry in its totality. When the product is there, can the municipality be able to assess it, given their own mandate? The inspectors in the municipalities can't deal with this, and therefore there's a difficulty at that point, operationally, when plans have to be approved and so forth, even if the product can be certified and so forth. So you find that the full value chain of development has to be repositioned to embrace the new technologies. It takes time, not a year, not 2 years, it takes time. This industry, the traditional system that we have, evolved over years, decades and decades. And therefore, when we want to shift the whole industry towards a certain disposition, we have to be cognizant that it will have to be by deliberate intervention at different key points. And therefore, Madam Chair, that transformation, that shift, as I indicated, would require incredible amount of strategic shift. Climate change is upon us. It's not every product that is coming that is useful for that purpose. And therefore, from a department's point of view, we are beginning to ask the question from a sustainability point of view. How should the industry be shifting? That's on the one level. But at the same time, let's re-engineer the total value chain in the home building industry. And therefore, that's what we are seeking to deal with. Madam Chair, lastly, just specifically to the two questions that are posed to us, why is this not widely used? In addition to what I've just alluded to, you would find the reality that from a cost point of view, project design, the projects are designed there with communities, agreed, and so forth, and executed. The full value chain is not yet ready or able to absorb these new technologies. That's the fact, that's the reality. But at the same time, Madam Chair, the community issues that we talked about, the fact that there is no track record for most of the technologies introduced. Track record, I mean, yes, I attended a school wherein it was prefabricated things 2 years ago when we started this talk of alternative technology. I visited the school. The good thing is still standing. I don't know what they call that thing, but it's a panel that is standing. But not that I've been out of school many years. I'm still young, I'm not yet 50. But the reality is that the track record for this new product is only now beginning to accumulate. And therefore, unless you can show somebody that this thing has been there for 30, 40 years, it becomes very difficult for people to be convinced about that. So there's a number of considerations around that. Lastly, what about the entity to certify, monitor, and so forth? And again, I go back to the reality. What we're talking about is not quality failure. This will not resolve the quality problems. What it does is we are talking products, we are talking solutions, we're talking technology in itself does not resolve the quality failures that the Honourable Member was referring to. What we have done, and are concluding now as a department, part of the strategy going forward, we are repositioning, and I'm glad my colleagues from the NHBRC are here. We've looked at the law, by and large, the national building regulations and standards. We've looked at the minimum norms applicable to the housing program. We've looked at the NHBRC, the Consumer Protection Measures Act. We've looked at the Constitution. We believe that we have sufficient ground to reposition the NHBRC to undertake universal quality management. I'm saying universal. It is an indictment, Madam Chair, let that be known. It is an indictment that the quality failures seem to be only looked at with the lens of subsidy program, when in fact the quality failures are widespread beyond the subsidy sector itself. Even in the private sector, you have that. But I suppose the concern is more where public funds are going. But from a human settlement point of view, the department has taken a view to say we require universal coverage, regardless of whether it's subsidy or otherwise. And therefore, starting with the subsidy, we have to clean that space and ensure that there is absolute coverage for quality management. That's on the one level. And therefore, from a settlement management point of view, we concluded discussions with SALGA. We are proceeding to talk to municipalities and the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs to look at the management of settlement, because it's a local government function. Half of the failures find themselves in that space. Our assessment indicates that there are four layers of quality control or quality management: the municipality, the developer who pays for the product, the if it's privately funded, you'll find that the banks have assessors and so forth to certify that there's value created, and lastly the NHBRC, which operates in both sectors. But then the problem has been that it's left to the developer or home builder to register. If they haven't registered, you can't catch them, or you can catch them, but then you can't change every site that is being built. But from a subsidy point of view, we know, secondly, which project, where, when, and therefore we're going to embark on this universal quality coverage, universal quality management coverage. And therefore we don't believe that a separate entity of sorts that is not mandated by law will have sufficient impact in that regard. Madam Chair, I'll pause there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rashabane. May I take Honorable Sain, Honorable Gwanya, Honorable Omen?
Thank you, Chair. I don't really have new questions, but I must take on the department on the long-winded answer that I absolutely do not accept. To my first question, in terms of using alternative products, nobody's asking for a wholesale shift. It's got to be done incrementally in small steps. I mean, the innovation hub was exactly the purpose of the innovation hub, as far as I understand, was exactly to identify alternative either methods of construction or products and to actually use it and make it available and put it out there to the community, the beneficiary community, to actually see and accept it. Not a lot has happened since then, I must admit, in terms of using some of the innovative methods that we've seen at that innovation up. So I don't buy this argument that it's going to take 30, 40 years and that it must be done wholesale and et cetera. A lot of these new products
there are guarantees. I mean, we just had the presentation by Agrimen that if it gets a certificate, the durability has been determined. So we don't have to wait once again to see a building or a house standing for 30 years. Otherwise, we certainly are not going to see it in our lifetime. No, I don't buy that, Madam Chair. I mean, just believe that certainly there's some substance to the fact that communities prefer brick and mortar. But that is where education comes in. That is where the department must tackle smaller projects to show people that there are alternatives and that it does work. And I believe they've been lacking as far as that's concerned. On the second answer to my question, and I think there's just some confusion, I think we both agree, where I said that perhaps one needed to look at, because the product generally is good. It's the way the product is being put together. I mean, if we see a house that is cracked and et cetera, it's not the brick that has failed. It's the way they use the brick. It's either the content of the mortar or something. So my question was, and I must say to some extent, NHBRC has failed in that regard, because they are primarily responsible, together with municipalities, to look at the quality of how these different products are put together. So that's the end result that you get. You know, to get back to the N2 gateway, and I don't believe we're ever going to get away from it. As far as I know, NHBRC was involved in monitoring the quality of the product. And we all know what we're sitting with there today. So, yes, NHBRC need to get their exact up in terms of doing monitoring. And if that is going to be the body that I refer to, that perhaps you needed something where a contractor gets some sort of certificate for not only the material, but the actual final product that they must deliver. That was what I was getting at. And if it has to be NHBRC, yes, then so be it. But then they certainly need to get their act checked up as far as concerned. Thank you.
Yeah,
Mike.
Chairperson Bang Mugwanya is on the line. Chairperson, my colleague has half covered me. And I must say, I'm happy to hear that NHBRC and SALGA are involved, because the disasters that we always see outside are just so shameful, and we taxpayers feel, damning. The problem is that it's the failure to train the enthusiastic entrepreneurs and grading them so that they produce a better product. We also have a failure of monitoring. The gateway thing is one shining example of failure of monitoring. And also, there is a failure to adhere to the procurement specifications. Yes, the product may be good, maybe brick and mortar may be good, but if there's no monitoring and no supervision and no adhering to the procurement specification, then everything is going to collapse. Also, I'm referring now to the municipalities and the provinces and government that gives out these tenders to people. It is the failure are out of greed. They take people who don't have experience. Great children are graded, but they will take anybody of theirs who's not graded, because there is an inside mold that wants to get the tender for volume, so that there is more money that is going to come out. I think we need to also go into that, because even in Gateway, there are a lot of thinking question marks that we have about how Gateway came about and to come up to such a disastrous product. It looks like there is just no monitoring. There's no upgrading of skills. There's no grading of people. There is it just gives to friends for better money. Thank you.
Let's say on this committee we all think alike when it comes to our members, and I've covered by and large by what has been said. I also just feel, look, I acknowledge also that it is the richer component of our residents that needs to pay for the startup of the alternate material energies, all of that. But having seen this here this morning, I want to say that I'm not convinced, and I think, and I acknowledge also about the brick and what the community likes. It's like electricity; they want to switch the lights, they want the wires. But I want to say that perhaps if we come along and we build a unit that people can actually see what it looks like, I think there would be a different response. But let me ask this question, because I am covered by what has been said. In the Eric Monobi, I don't know if it's a development or what it is, but there's a little house that's sitting there, and it looks very nice in the picture. Could you just give us some idea of what size that is and what the actual cost of constructing that house has been? And then I would imagine that it sounds to me, after the responses that we've got, that we don't really have developments that we can say, you know, this is where we've done this. We're busy doing it. But I would imagine that where this has been imported from, and it sounds as if it's from overseas, that there is some degree of how long these houses have been standing. But I'm more particularly interested in the cost of that little house in the field. Thank you,
Jay. Honourable Minister. Thank you for the question.
Other readers will come up. I've been listening to the presentation, the questions, and the response. I find it very interesting and educative. I can stand in here for you, the supporter who has set goals somewhat. The member of the department mentions, you know, a point which to me is very interesting, because we're always questioning. When you look at the quality of the houses that we've seen that have been built, I mean, the people have already stressed that. I don't need to, and I think, as you say, we all think alike. I think because we all obsess the same, everywhere we go, the questions are more or less the same. You mentioned the question of the indigenous housing technology, and to me that is of interest. Not only the technologies, but also the structure, what I would call the traditional structure. You even go on to ask and say, does it have to be for the house to be built? And we all know, those of us who grew up long time ago, that bricks were really out there in the real area. They were not the real material with which to build houses. But those houses, the huts in particular, that were built, I can tell you, I grew up with my grandfather's place, and 50 years down the line, there's a hut that we grew up seeing, we were living there, and it was still there, standing straight and upright. The only thing that needed to be renovated time and again was the roof, because it was grass roof. But the walls were strong. I also keep asking this question, you know, when I see the way we are building the houses, this is as if we have completely forgotten that there were houses before 1994. There were houses many, many years ago, and these were strong. So my question then would be, why has the department, or look at the department is that neglected looking at an area of the use of indigenous knowledge, indigenous housing technology? Why have we left it up until now? And we are now saying that because it's the house, you see, has got to be a brick. It seems as if it's no longer a thing that the indigenous housing technology is useful anymore.
Honourable members, I have one comment to make to this mention. And I would not allow it.
everybody in this meeting has been invited to participate. I am not going to allow anybody to discredit or condemn any other institution or person, what means in fact any other institution that has been invited to make a presentation. The statement from the department, I don't agree with it, to say they are not going to allow anybody who is not by the law. I think that statement, the last statement from Mr. Disabani, was a little bit uncalled for. That was a discredit statement of condemning of others. So I would like to say, remember that that's what I'm talking about. That's why I was this was a little bit harsh. Because all of us here, we are looking for solutions. Can you put this on? We are looking for solutions. We have got a problem. We are trying to solve. We are trying to solve a problem that is encountering government and Agri South Africa is part of the stakeholders of government, because this is an agency that is from the other department. I don't know if they say Public Works is a government department. And we have got to work with everybody within government or even in private sector to get solutions. So here we want an information. And then as the portfolio committee, we will work out each and every information we get from these presentations. And then we can make it, you have got the right to make suggestions, to advise the minister. So the department manages the mistake. Department manages the mistake as if we are dependent to it as the public representative. We have to collect any information. And it is the government's position to get any innovation that are going to assist us to go forward. Please, I'm begging you guys. When we are dealing with this matter, we must try to put this band there. We are not saying that we are going to do something, we are going to take over the NHBRC. But we want information here to take us forward, to build this government of power. Because it's our government, for all of us. So really, I'm asking you guys. I'm asking you. I didn't like that response. It was a little bit harsh. Another problem. Who's the leader?
Mine is not about the material. It's about the relationship between the two governments, the departments. That is the human settlement and corporate governance that are affairs. It is where the problem is when you so this is our part of the monitoring now. Because if you are wanting to build a house, the market is going to check the house from down upward. Now there's a department of corporate governance that are affairs. We're supposed to do the same and check whether it has been built under the relationship together between the two. That's my question. Because if you talk about the monitoring, and of course, there should be some spectra, the world that we must check. This is where the problem is.
other than telephone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are three questions. I must admit, Madam Chair, the department has no problem with the agreement, nor any of the agencies involved. I was merely responding, and I do apologize if an impression is created that we do have a problem with the Agrima South Africa. We've been working with Agrima South Africa for a long time. I was responding to a specific question that the honorable member stay imposed to us as to whether or not an entity shouldn't be introduced to certify the work of the builders or contractors. So I recognize
that. I think if you are responding, the manner you are responding, that is the manner I'm questioning, to say AgriSouth Africa is not authorized by the law. The way you mentioned it, your approach is accepted.
Thank you, ma'am. The two questions, Madam Chair. Again, I need to emphasize that the integrity of products and structures and technology is a function of regulation, and that is in place. What is a problem is the quality failures, not of the products themselves. I'm saying products as in materials or technology and so forth. Quality failure in putting together the product is really a function of governance or lack thereof, accountability or lack thereof. And that when we locate that appropriately, and that is the assessment that we have undertaken as a department, inspired by the insistence of this committee to say, attend to this problem. Hence, Madam Chair, the human settlement strategy begins to then say, systematically, let us then attend to the food value chain, local government, just coming back to the specific question that is posed, there is a very strong recognition that human settlements in totality have a direct bearing on local government and is affected in return by local government functionality or otherwise. So there's a very strong relationship, Madam Chair, in that regard. What we are moving into is then strengthening the fulfillment of those expectations and systematically addressing the inability of one or other sphere in fulfilling its part in respect of performance, in respect of the built environment and human settlement. That's the reality of intergovernmental relations that we are strengthening. Secondly, Madam Chair, the question that was posed to us relates to, in part, the indigenous technology and why that has been neglected. Madam Chair, in hindsight, it is more the scale at which that is applied. And that is a function of the contractual arrangements that have been pursued with the objective to increase the pace of delivery and the scale that was being pursued. Now, in the last five years, that has been recognized, and our efforts, the innovation hub, the research that has been undertaken, the collaboration with various institutions, has been seeking to unlock that. And what we are acknowledging is that it is a far elaborate and comprehensive set of interventions that are required. And that is not impossible. We are acknowledging that we entered this space from a particular point of view, and we recognize that more needs to be done to achieve the outcomes that we are seeking. Just on the beneficiary side, and I'll just conclude there, Madam Chair, it is also a function that once the house is built, over time, the needs of that household change. Now, unless you can be present on site, because communities or other households undertake these extensions by themselves, once the contractor is off site. Now, how do you close that gap? Because then they will have to find the same panel or otherwise, which is not necessarily readily available in the warehouse or hardware. So the full chain becomes a very important consideration for us to say the life cycle of the product, not only from the durability point of view, but from the user point of view, who have to adjust them according to their needs, extend that house. Those materials in themselves are not readily available unless you go back to the original builder or supplier of that material. And the development of the supply side becomes a very important consideration going forward. Madam Chair, I will pause there, acknowledging that it may be useful to provide the committee with where else have the products that are now demonstrated at the Innovation Hub, where are they applied? There are projects that are beginning to take up those technologies that are in the Innovation Hub. The question, and that is our concern, how do you upscale it? And that's what we want to enable as a department. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Jeffrey Mahashi. I'm the Technical Director of NHBRC. I just would want to respond to the question that was raised by one or two of the honorable members. One is with regard to the Eric Molobi house, that the cost of that particular house. Just as a small background, Madam Chair, the Eric Molobi was established to promote these innovative technologies. We have approximately 19 innovative technologies at the hub. And the reason why we have all these houses there is that we would want to see how these houses actually perform with time. We know that Agroma would have performed certain tests, which you mentioned that we have accelerated a durability test. But, I mean, some of those things may actually be theoretical, but you actually need to see how do they now perform with time. So if you actually come to the Innovation Hub, you may find some of those houses cracked. You may find some of those houses with that are very hot. And the reason we are leaving them as they are is so that we'll be in a position to understand these innovative technologies better. So you come there, we say, leave that cracked. We want to understand the behavior of this particular innovative technology. We have also started to instrument all those houses so that we take temperatures. We know we have met thousands of innovative technology marketing people who tell us, yes, warm in winter, cool in summer. But now we instrument and we actually take measurements and say, is it true that it's actually warm in winter? Is it true it's cool in summer? So we are busy actually doing that so that we'll be in a position when we come back and we try and promote these technologies and say, yes, this technology is indeed performing as it was submitted and as it was tested by Agroma. Now, to come to the cost, when we also started the Innovation Hub, it was through a competition, which we did hand-in-hand with the APSA, Agroma, and other organizations such as NHFC. We then said, all the low-income houses must be built using the subsidy quantum. And the subsidy quantum at that point in time, which is now 3 years ago, was approximately 31,000. So we said all low-income houses must be built at 31,000 rand. So if the house that honorable member was actually asking, if it is, I don't know it offhand because there are about 19, or this one here, it's not actually a low income house, this one here, right? It was actually in the affordable. We had two ranges, low income, and also had the affordable houses. The affordable houses, we're actually building them at 140,000. So this one here was actually built at 140,000 as of the 3 years ago. The low income, we stipulated 40 square meters at 31,000 rand. So if you'd actually be interested in that, you can actually come. We are finalizing a brochure that we can actually send through to the members so that you can see the size of the house and the cost of that particular unit. We are also running now again a second phase of that competition in Wellington here. Innovation Hub, we've got, I think, approximately 30 different systems that will be built in Wellington, right? And that, again, we're going to be showcasing. We're doing it in conjunction with APSA. So we also have the low income. We also have the affordable houses there. So we are trying now to assist the Department of Human Settlements in promoting these through some innovation hubs. Right now, as we are speaking also today, we've been invited by the KZN to actually showcase and start an innovation hub in KZN so that we can start the rollout of all these innovative technologies. So from our side, as NHBRC, you are on the implementing side, trying to actually ensure then that these innovative technologies, they do meet the relevant standards. But we should also take into cognizance that from NHBRC point of view, when it comes to inspections and quality control, we are only involved in those houses which are enrolled with NHBRC. Even the house is not enrolled with NHBRC, we are actually not involved in the inspections or the quality thereof of those particular housing units. But earlier on, I think the DDG has highlighted that we are now getting into a new paradigm shift where now national is human settlements is saying every single house, whether it's enrolled or not enrolled, must be inspected. But prior to this, if a house is not enrolled with NHBRC, we are not involved with that particular house. We are not involved in the inspections. But I think moving forward, national has engaged us and say, go and inspect every single house, whether enrolled or not enrolled. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I think we then want to have
thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps should the committee be willing or permitting in that regard? We would request or appreciate an opportunity to share with the committee the outcomes of the assessments and the research that's been undertaken on this question of alternative technologies. It has a number of angles from the department's point of view, because the questions of economy, availability of materials, sustainability, and therefore we believe there may be value as the committee engages with the subject of alternative technologies. The committee may benefit from the outcomes of that research and perhaps some of the initiatives that we are embarking upon to ensure universal coverage of quality management. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Do you have something to say? Mama Ngoni?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a very small question from the NHRBC, NHBRC. If you have been involved in the assessment of the development, how come the failure rate is so high? Number two, we are talking of food production. Has anybody ever thought of leaving space for within a household or by a household, because the houses we have seen, I'm sorry, I'm going to make a lot of errors because I'm new to the committee. I don't know what has been covered and what has not been covered, but I'm very perturbed to see how these houses are mounted one on top of the other. If, for instance, there's a row next door, it affects the whole street, because the acoustics, the everything, and particularly I'm more concerned about the lack of space for flowering or planting even veggies or just for whole household consumption. Was that not taken into consideration when these were done? That's why initially I was asking about who plans these homes or these developments. It's out of that concern that people are made now. They are forced to go and buy food with money they don't have, instead of making food and availing it from within their own household. Maybe I'm talking from a village point of view, but I am from a rural area, and I think that is how we survive in the valley. And this thing about houses falling on one another, and it's something that we from the rural areas just cannot accept, where you can't even make your own food. Thank you.
Okay. And I think the issue of this costing, this caustic, the design, I'm sure this NHBRC quality assurance, if those ones. And I think this is very interesting. So, guys, I'm just going to let's discuss, because we still have ample time to discuss this. I was just triggering this debate because it is important to begin from somewhere. As Mr. Rishawane has stated here, we need to engage more engagement, and we're going to give that opportunity to the department, because it is a serious concern for the committee. We cannot afford those amounts of rent in the rectification program, of which we should have taken those rents to further the development of our human settlement. So I think that is important. We stress them out together with the department, and we ensure that it is shared at them, the shared housing. We are going forward to human settlement. So we need to try this thing. But as long we are sure that the creator, the platform, we leave these things behind and then we go forward. That is the purpose of this interaction. So, what among our members are to message? What are the proponents? And what kind of time can I send them?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've had to get the abuse the privilege of the NHBRC being here. And you may rule me out of order if you want, but I just want to refer to what you saw the N2 gateway, and I'm quite sure you were involved in all of that. I want to just ask a question. Simple things like sewage running from a toilet in the one flat into another flat. No air bricks was something that struck me in particular. There's not an air brick in these flats. So there's all this moisture, this moss growing on the wall. The cracking, just one after the other. I wonder if I may just ask the chairperson whilst they are here, to what extent did they actually go and inspect those buildings?
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would only say that the houses were not enrolled with NHBRC, so we were not involved during the construction process. And just as I don't know if you want me, Madam Chair, to respond to the other question around the failure rate. I think there was an issue raised. Right. And most of those failure rates are actually on houses that are not enrolled with NHBRC. And there are also these other houses which are PHP or people's housing processes. And those houses, they, most of them are actually not enrolled with the NHBRC. And that's where you actually find most of the failure rates. But where houses are enrolled with NHBRC, immediately we have our inspectors. All the workmanship issues will be dealt with during construction. And we are liable as NHBRC after construction. If there is any problem, we would go back as NHBRC and ensure that all those issues are actually addressed, provided the houses were enrolled with NHBRC.
Just on this last point, I mean, the department knows that we've got law, we've got legislation, which is the NHBRC Act, that houses should not be constructed without it being registered with the NHBRC. Now, for an admission here, and I've tried to get an admission before from the department, if you recollect, Madam Chair, that there were houses, and this involved the Cosmos Citizen. I mean, today we hear that the NHBRC Entry Gateway was not registered with NHBRC. And they should not have proceeded. I mean, it was legislation brought by the department to this committee, to Parliament, which was then approved and signed into law, and yet they go and they ignore their own legislation. I mean, that's unacceptable, Jacobson.
I'm just trying to look at the numbers.
the meeting, the members would left behind because we still have the minutes to process. That's a minute.
Give
give you a feedback about that incident that occurred that day. I had a meeting with the minister to discuss this matter with him and also with the deputy minister. And the minister was so angry to hear about this, and he said he was going to handle it and he's going to respond to the protocol committee in writing. Then this morning, I had so many messages. The DM phoned me and they telling that they are in a cabinet meeting, but the minister has instructed the officials to draft this letter and they bring to him so that he can sign it. He wants to keep that letter, the content of the letter himself. So there were so many letters, even his office, the PLO, and even the PLO, they were rushing to apologize that after the cabinet meeting, that he had to show a bomb for his state and the so I think it had an impact on your steps. I think one of the members, we have come to the end of our meeting.
In terms of our agenda, I could see him. Members don't want to leave. Honorable Steyn, Honorable Bomet. Chair, if I may, you will recall that we had a joint oversight meeting with Scopa Monty. And I think the very next day, the previous CEO of Tbilisha, who is now some senior official in HDA, was on TV, I'm not sure which program it was, where he actually refuted and said that they had attended to all the complaints. Now, clearly what we saw there was exactly not that. And I'm just wondering, excuse me, in light of his appearance on TV, where he said to Benisha, attended to all the complaints, that if we shouldn't be calling NHBRC specifically on the problems they've experienced with maintenance on the N2 gateway to come and talk to us again, because we've all now been there, we've seen it, in a report presumably from Scopa, and we can actually, I think if you get hold of it, pass it on to them so they can respond to those issues. For him to go on national TV and say that they've responded to it and for us to have seen a contradiction of that is simply not acceptable. We need to know once and for all what they're doing in terms of maintenance checks. So my suggestion is that we get them at some convenient
Chairperson, just on that matter, I think we were very disappointed at what we saw last week, but on the process of moving forward, my understanding is that there will be a Scopa report. Now, but what is our position regarding the department? Because, I mean, obviously we can't go and do the work. We're an you know, we need to oversee that it does get done, does happen. Would we then request, you know, maybe we'll get a copy of the letter, you as the chairperson might get a copy of the letter, but so the report at Scopa, because they will sign off this thing now. But we do need to ensure, you know, there have been so many delegations out there that those people are so fed up with seeing people marching up there and coming to look, and then the paper comes and the press and everybody, and then the next lot comes. So I think we've got to ensure that there is action. Now, obviously, there's a process, and I'm not terribly sure what that is, whether that would be for us now to request the department to come and answer to those repairs, or whoever's ultimately, it's got to be the department, I would think.
Actually, I'm also covered because I thought that by now we would have been supplied with, or you would have been supplied with the report advised GOPA, who had invited us to join them in the oversight at Sri Lanka and Gateway. There were quite a number of things, disturbing things. It appeared as if a lot of people had been there, but what has been done to rectify or to ease the pressure on those people? And the, like I'm saying, honorable government has covered me, because it's useless for us to just go and visit, and when we see errors, we don't defend rectification.
Learning.
and Honorable Machoba Foreman and Mungwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I'm a little bit worried because the attitude of the officials is getting worse and worse. You'll recall when we have a report from Utumedicha before they closed down. When I raised the question of when are they going to finish to ratify and to gateway, they simply say everything is done, is in order. And I disagree with them that that is my constituents. I'm there each and every weekend. Unfortunately, now the minister was there. We were there with the scoper. But they still released a statement of a false statement. What is it that we can do to stop all this?
Honorable
Foreman?
Honorable
Foreman,
thank you for
your
Chairperson, I think that your idea is a good one. I would just suggest, though, that we try to do it this side of our constituency work rather than the other side. I really think there's a big urgency. Not only have these things seem to be recurring on in the media, you know, about Into Gateway, there was a whole, also just about, just over a week ago, there was a whole program on special assignment about Into Gateway. So I think, you know, if we can now start to turn that around into a positive, you know, what we are doing now about it, rather than the visits out there, I think that, you know, that would be good. And I think, you know, if we leave it now until we get back, it's going to mean we're going to be talking somewhere in the middle of October towards the end of October. I think it's too late.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, besides what has been said, it has been my observation. Maybe I'm overly anxious. I'm used to private sector, but I don't know. I'm also propelled by ignorance. Maybe that's why I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I am observing some sort of arrogance and undermining that seems to be perpetuated by departments towards the portfolio committee. I don't know how that can be rectified, but it is very, very annoying. They seem to be doing as they like. I don't know who is supposed to be doing what in order to rectify that. But it has a lot of dynamics, I suppose. Now, the second thing is, again, I'm ignorant. Is Gateway the only settlement that we have got to look at? Why Gateway only? Are there others? Because we see every day in papers, on the media, people identifying areas where government has failed, because it all impacts on the failures of government. That is what the press always does, how the government has failed. Now, is the Gateway the only area of failure? Are there no other areas we can also embark on and do the same? Pressurizing for delivery and rectification of whatever wrongs that is. Because right through South Africa, we have got this problem, or we are taking maybe inceptions. I'm not sure how we are operating. That is the reason why.
No, ma'am. Just to respond to your question, the portfolio committee handles everything nationally, but the problem or the concern is Into Gateway. Into Gateway is a special project, the pilot project that is the only project that involves 3 spheres of government, management of 3 spheres of government. So the government was trying to introduce or to inculcate this culture of ensuring that if we are saying it's an integrated, because we don't have an integrated program in the true sense. It's just a big thing.
But the government was trying to put a structure that is going to resemble the integration of our society. And at the same time, it has to involve 3 spheres of government working together, those intergovernmental relations. It has to promote intergovernmental relations. But again, as you have heard, I don't want to repeat that there were loopholes that happened there. We're not going to go back there. But now they've tried to correct those relationships, all those procedures. That is why I insist to say, as the portfolio committee, whenever we go to that project, let's ensure that at least there is quite a representation from the city, from the provincial government, and as well as us. We cannot just go and then say we are going there, and then anybody could just come that day, a junior official. That is why we have to go together there. So otherwise, we are looking at the program, housing project nationally. We are going to have take our oversight to Eastern Cape, but we are still arranging, but it has not yet been approved. So those programs, those tools have to be approved by the chair of chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Enjoy your birthday.